15th, not April Fool's Day, but this is IRS Day, and I'm just so glad to have my friend Mike Smith, pastor of Country Bible Church in Brenham, Texas, on with me again today, and we'll be exploring his book in progress, Tolerating Tyranny. And just, Mike, thanks again for coming back with me, brother.
Well, the honor is mine. I really appreciate you having me and giving me this opportunity to express the things that I'm trying to get forward in my book here.
Sure enough. And again, for our listening audience, I've already apologized to Mike, and he indicated didn't need to, but we had a glitch last week where my daughter had a doctor's appointment, had a doctor's appointment, and we had to cancel last week's program, but we're back again today, and if it happens again, I'll try to get the word out early. So thank all of you who are on this morning and those who may log on later. Mike, give us your website again, so if somebody would be interested in getting to your website, they'd know where to go.
It's www.countrybiblechurch, all small letters, no spaces, .us.
Okay, that's an interesting, I don't know that I know anybody else that has a U.S. Extension on your on their website, but that's great. So countrybiblechurch.us?
Countrybiblechurch.us.
Okay. Now, what about your email address, Mike? Now, I had an email address up there again. It was at Bible Gold, and I took it out of there because I've got another good email address. What is your email address?
It's Mike, M-I-K-E, 44, G-V, as in green vine, at gmail.com.
Okay. Is 44, is that your age?
No, that's the first numbers on my street.
Oh, is that right? Oh, you live on Greenvine?
No, I live on Winter's Lane.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. Just curious. I figured if I can associate some things with that, maybe I remember what your email address is. Well, listen. What we did last 2 weeks ago when we were together, we began to consider your book, Tolerating Tyranny. And if somebody wanted that information, they could go out to iTunes and download that at that point in time, whenever they desire, and listen to it on demand. And my desire was to maybe to walk through a chapter at a time with you. And quite honestly, folks, you need to realize I'm not blowing smoke. I'm not into blowing smoke about anything. But as I read through Mike's book and had an opportunity to read it ahead of time before it's published, I was so impressed with what is there that I wish every American, and, you know, because of freedom, I'd like to say I'm forced to read it, but that would take away the freedom, which is what I'm sort of into anyway. But I'm telling you, every American ought to read that book. And Mike, if Jesus will delay the rapture, if God the Father will delay the rapture, we may get through this book. But I would imagine that just, a chapter at a time, a chapter at a time, a chapter at a time, we just barely got into the preface last week, and that's where we're going to continue there, from the preface, and then we'll just walk through a chapter at a time, if you will allow us to do that. And you said in that preface, there is no honor in tolerating tyranny. It is neither virtuous nor patriotic. Now, for those of you that are online with me, you can actually scroll down through the notes and the questions that I'm going to ask, the comments that we're going to make. And all you've got to do is to scroll down, and you'll be able to do that. So let's pick up right here with number one, the question I've got here, Mike. Does God ever require anyone, and I think there's some key words here, does God ever require anyone to voluntarily submit to cruel or abusive treatment? That's the question, Mike. You can answer it.
Well, you're right. It does have some key words in it. I think one of the major words in it is voluntarily. There's a difference between having to submit to abuse because you have no alternative. Voluntarily submitting is another issue. I think of the bully in the schoolyard. You think of a child that is weaker, and the bully is going to use him as a punching bag. Is it honorable? Is anything that is good about someone voluntarily submitting to being beat up in order to, you might call it, giving the bully demands lunch money. And he continues to voluntarily giving that lunch money. Actually, it's theft. Or you can say a wife is being used as a punching bag. Is there anything that is virtuous? Is there anything that is honorable in her remaining voluntarily submitting to that tyranny? I think the answer is no.
Okay, hold on just a second, Mike. Dub and Joyce indicate they're having a hard time hearing you. Let me ask Mike. Let me ask Ed. Ed, or what is your? Are you able to hear Mike? Okay, or is that just on Dub's end? Yeah, I'm looking for maybe someone else. Donna Hayden, are you hearing Mike okay? Or?
No, he's very, very faint.
Very faint? Okay, honey. Okay. Mike, well, guess we're going to need to get... do me a favor. Go up. See if you can go up under audio up there, up on the top line, over on the left-hand corner, Mike, and click on audio. And when that box drops down...
I'm not finding audio.
Okay, up on the top, upper left hand corner of your screen.
Participation.
You see what now?
I see chat and participation on it.
That's on the right hand side. How about on the left hand side?
Oh, okay. I see what you're talking about. Okay, I got the both volumes all the way up. How about that?
Okay, it's all the way up. Okay, now let me ask you this. Say something again, Mike, and let me ask Donna if she's hearing you better now.
Okay, I've increased the volume on all the way to the maximum.
Okay, let's see if Donna, what are you doing? Is it any better?
Much better.
Okay, that's it. Okay, Mike, that sounds better, buddy.
Okay.
Now, I hate to have you on for an hour and nobody hear what you have to say.
Okay.
Okay. Good enough. Yes, that's okay. That'll be fine. So go ahead, Mike. We were dealing with, does God ever require anyone to voluntarily submit to cruel or abusive punishment? I think you've dealt with that. Let's go on to the next question then. Is forbearance and toleration of abuse ever a virtue? And by the way, I think, Mike, that we're not only talking about the abuse where you get abused by children getting abused by their family, et cetera. But this even goes to a governmental level, which is the thing that's coming up next. So why don't you just answer this question? Is forbearance and toleration of abuse ever a virtue? That's a great question.
Yeah, it's a very broad question.
Mm-hmm.
When you use the word ever, then it covers a lot of territory.
Oh, yes.
One way that I can narrow it down a bit, again, is with the idea of it being voluntary. That is the issue that a lot of people think, that it's automatic. In other words, if you subscribe to the idea that we are to be unconditionally submit, we're to unconditionally submit to the government, then you would have to answer that question as yes, you do. It is. You do have to tolerate abuse, and to not tolerate it is never a virtue.
Okay. Now you're popping now, and maybe because you're up close
okay,
to your mic.
Put it a little further away now.
Okay, that's fine. Just I'm not sure whether Danny and Candace have a question or not. Let me go to them. They got their hand up. Let me see. Danny or Candace, do you have a question or a comment? I see you have your hand up. So if you have your hand up, that means you want to ask a question or make a comment. So if you want, you can take your hand down if you weren't desiring to talk, okay? Okay, go ahead, Mike. Go from there. I think we're going to be okay. We'll get this right here in a minute.
We know that we have to tolerate shortcomings and foibles and those who have authority over us. We understand that, but that's different than abuse. One of the key words in this is abuse. And a lot of people say, well, where is the line with regards to abuse? I think that's hard to see these days because the government has throughout history been careful not to impose too much to where it will stir the people into action.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is incrementally, little by little, become more controlling. We have less rights, and the people get used to incrementally less and less freedom. And so over a period of time, you wake up and you're enslaved. But it's not talking about just foibles. We're talking about abuse, and I think it's because that incremental approach cannot readily recognize that it's become abuse.
Yeah, well, you know, that's there's an analogy that has been used over the years, and that's throwing the frog into the hot boiling water. It'll jump out, but if you put him in the water and turn the heat up just a little bit, you'll finally end up boiling him. Isn't that what we're looking at?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought about using that same illustration because it's such a good one. They're very clever.
They're
diabolical in the way they do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, even in the paper that's titled "Who Killed Excellence," and it deals with how the United States, the children in our school system, have been dumbed down over a long period of time, and whether someone wants to call it a conspiracy theory or not, I think that there are a lot of conspiracy theories out there, but if something is fact, it's not, you know, I don't have any problem with it being a conspiracy if in fact it is. And that's what's happened with our education system. You read where those who actually wanted to transform this country into a socialist country and do it by dumbing down the people so they wouldn't understand what's going on. They realized that if they had implemented the philosophy of education all at one time, there would have been a horrible rebellion in this country against that. But what they've done is that incrementally done it to where right now we're so dumbed down in our country that it's no wonder we are where we are right now. But this next comment, you say that government can become so corrupted by evil that continued allegiance and submission to it becomes evil as well. Mike, how is that so? Explain that to us.
Well, let me read a couple of sentences before I made that statement.
Do it.
Okay. There is a point where forbearance and toleration are no longer a virtue, a time when authority is no longer legitimate, and when submission is no longer required. Government can become so corrupted by evil that continued allegiance and submission to it becomes evil as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm saying is this is the points that I'm making, just like this one, are unpleasant. They're uncomfortable. People don't like to go there. They like to pretend that things are not so bad because they don't want to acknowledge that there is a point where they have to get to in their mind that things are not well, that there's something dreadfully wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people don't like to think or address these unpleasantries, so they just ignore it, and they pretend that things are well. And then you have some people who have the idea that it's the law, you have to obey it. And then there's also the I guess you could call it maybe a hurdle these days, where they think that this point could never come to fruition here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it putting on rose-colored glasses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, you used the term pretend, and that is that the people are pretending that all is well. Mike, I think we need to go back. We need to go back all the way to the fact that why man is on this planet to begin with. And I think that I know that he is here biblically to resolve the spiritual battle called the angelic conflict. And that Adam and Eve created in the garden were created righteously, but then they lost their righteous condition and passed that sinful nature on to every human being born into this world except for Christ. Question then, why do you think that people are pretending. I agree with it. I think that's exactly what they got their head in the sand, you know, and they're, it's like, if I just don't look at this, it's all going to go away. Why do you think then that people are pretending that nothing is wrong?
There's probably several answers to that, but I think the primary one is fear. I think people are afraid to face reality.
Okay.
And it's similar to what I think happened in Germany. When Hitler took mm-hmm. over, he was elected. People thought that he was essentially the Messiah, and he had all these grandiose plans.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
sound familiar. And they started to buy into the idea that they were going to be a super race and a super people. They had been beaten down in World War One. And then they were essentially oppressed with the terms of the treaties and so forth after the
mm-hmm.
war. And so they were eager to accept these things. And they wanted to have a sense of patriotism. But what happened was, over a period of time, they started to degenerate because the Hitler started to put in his Nazi regime.
Mm-hmm.
They just waited and waited and kept thinking, well, this I don't agree with this, but maybe it'll get better. And they continued that to the point to where the paragraph I had read just a moment ago,
mm-hmm.
that they continued to give allegiance and submission when it was no longer due, because the government became so evil that...
Mm-hmm.
Continued submission to it became evil as well. And, of course, the at the end of the war with the Nuremberg trials, it proved that was true, that every one of those men that were on trial in Nuremberg for
mm-hmm,
war
mm-hmm.
crimes had the same defense. I was just obeying orders.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
what some people today think, that it doesn't matter who's in charge, what they say, or what they do. Unthinkingly, unconditionally, we're required to submit to that. And a lot of people think that the Bible requires that, and they often
mm-hmm.
go to Romans chapter 13, substantiate that. And in this book, I go into great detail
mm-hmm.
to help unburden them with that idea.
That's going to be at least another, once we get to that, that'll probably be at least another year or two of you coming back on the program to deal with. You did a good job of that with Romans 13. Good gracious. So, folks, listen, stick around a while. Make sure you don't plan anything on Mondays between 9 and 10 o'clock in the morning Central Daylight Time, because we're going to get to that. Well, Mike, you're talking about maybe a nation becoming evil. You talked about Germany becoming that way. Question. If I think that one of the problems that we have as pastors is using terminology without maybe explaining it to our congregations. I know that's not what you're doing. I don't think that's what I'm doing. But we want to make sure that our people, the perception of our terminology is the same, that they're understanding it the same way we do. What do you mean? What actually would constitute then a nation becoming evil? What is an evil nation? How do you get that way?
Well, for one thing, whenever people are not getting the Word of God in their soul,
mm-hmm.
they're inclined to embrace whatever the culture is presenting. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, our culture and our media has gone off the charts with regards to evil, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're getting news. I think we're getting propaganda. Now, there are
mm-hmm.
places...
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know how to think. And
hello.
Nations,
yeah. Yeah.
when a nation starts to embrace such horrendous things as same-sex marriage, and you have the president coming on the broadcast, goes worldwide, that says he encourages same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You have... the attitude towards Israel that they need to give up more land,
mm-hmm.
and it borders, if not blatantly, anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These are things that are demonstrating that a nation has digress so far into degeneracy that it's in the business of evil. And that, those are just a few points.
Sure. Well, Mike, I define evil, and I'm not sure whether this might be a kernel definition, but I accept it. I believe it's true. I define evil as any distortion of truth, no matter how slight the distortion. So if we're looking at the three categories of truth that the kernel taught, there's the laws of divine establishment, the four divine institutions, the gospel, and the royal family honor code. So if we distort any one of the principles, promises, doctrines, techniques, rules for living, operational procedures that guide the Christian, if we distort any one of those even slightly, we have evil. If we distort the gospel, we have evil. If we distort freedom, marriage, family, or patriotism, and I subtitle patriotism, free market capitalism, if we distort any of those, then what we're doing is we have an evil principle. And if we practice that, then we have an evil practice. So could you go along with that idea that evil is any distortion of truth, no matter how slight the distortion?
Absolutely. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
People do not have truth in their soul. And when I say truth, I'm talking about absolute truth.
Absolute, yes.
The Word of God. This is the protection against the world that is evil. And what we see today is what happens when a nation turns their back on God, and they're living in order to just have pleasure and fun. Their issues that we should be addressing are hidden, and when people go to the news to try to find out what is going on, they not only get a distorted view of what's going on, but the news also is telling people how to think. Even their vocabulary is picked up by the people, and the vocabulary is what we think with. And so if you start using the vocabulary that has been programmed for you in order to go along with an evil agenda, the next thing you know, you are right in step with evil. And I believe that God is, I don't think he approves of obedience to evil. I think he tells us to resist
evil. Yeah, when you make statements like that, my response is hello. And when I say hello, I mean I'm in lockstep with what you're saying, my brother. And you know, looking back now, you just made the comment, and I think that the statement would go something like this: that if a human being does not have a frame of reference for absolute truth, he stands to run the risk of being duped by the evil viewpoint that's being perpetrated upon the human race from whatever source it's coming. And so I guess where I was going with that is this is why we need pastor teachers who are teaching the whole counsel of God and teaching it eisegetically, categorically, and exegetically. And while you were talking, Mike, I did some quick math. And I believe that probably you have been into doctrine a whole lot longer than I have. And I go back to 1973, which is 40 years, brother, 40 years. And I can't imagine people sitting in a pew where they're not getting sound doctrine several times a week.
Well, most people go to church for the wrong reason anyway.
Yes.
They go to be entertained.
Mm-hmm.
They go in order to frequent country club, because that's what so many churches have become.
Mm-hmm.
This past Sunday, I my message was on worship and what true worship is. And the great majority of churches are so far from it.
Yeah.
These churches are not only are they not addressing issues that are desperately needed to be taught, they're just tickling ears. They're telling the people what they want to hear. And usually it's the mega churches that buy into this. It's not, I may have said this last time, I'm not sure, but
well, say it again.
As a standard rule or a rule of thumb, the larger the church, the less chance there is of truth being disseminated there.
Boy, hello again. Goodness, you're absolutely right.
They're after numbers. They want to have a big congregation so that they can have a big church.
Mm-hmm.
People today are hypersensitive. And if you say anything that is, if you even address a controversial issue, people are going to condemn you. And if you say anything that they would say, well, that's political. That has to do with government. That's off bounds. That's out of bounds.
Yeah.
You start to blame someone. They think that this is not your job. You have no right to go in those areas. And I'm wondering, where in the Bible do they get that? Because
yes,
I don't
uh-huh.
see it there. I know that the founding fathers were led in large by the Black Regiment, which were the pastors who were teaching the people the biblical precepts with regard to a relationship between a Christian and their government. That's why they were prepared. That's why their battle cry was resistance to tyranny is obedience to God.
Wait, say that again. Say that again, Mike. Go ahead.
Resistance to tyranny is obedience to God.
Boy, that's hello again.
The battle cry of the fountain of our patriots that founded this country, and that didn't come out of thin air. They got it from the pastors. Back then, the pastors had their messages published, and they would go out through all the land of the people and could read them. We think that they were backwards. They didn't have smartphones, and they didn't have electricity. They didn't have all these things, and so they were backwards, but quite the opposite. They're hard to read because they're so far advanced above what our thinking and what our education system prepares people to be.
Well, Mike, when I look down the list, we've got several people online with us right now, and we'll have a multitude of people that will hear this on iTunes sometime within the next month or so. Okay, my question then to our listening audience out here now, and those that will listen to this later on. You talk about the Black Regiment, and the Black Regiment was pastors in their black robes. My question then to you is this: how can we motivate, or what can we do to tell our folks that are online with us and the thousands who may hear this later on, how can we tell them that they have a responsibility in all this also? It's not just you and me that need to raise our voice, but how can they get involved in raising their voice in order to see that maybe we could get this thing turned around? It isn't going to happen with just you and me. We've got to stir somebody else up. How do we go about that?
Well, the first thing is, I think pastors need to step up to the plate, and they need to address issues without being afraid of offending someone. Well, when I talk about pastors addressing politics, I don't normally phrase it that way, but that's the way some people would allege it.
Sure.
But I'm not talking about pastors talking about Democrats or Republicans or anything of that venue at all whatsoever. What I'm talking about, if you talk to politics, you're talking about the issues of the day.
Yes.
When you're talking about, as I mentioned a while ago, the bills that are going through Congress and the states right now that are going through the process of approving of or passing laws that have to do with same-sex marriage. A lot of pastors won't even go there. They won't even touch that because it's a touchy issue. This thing about what's named Obamacare, and the fact that you have the government coming in that is going to regulate to such a degree that it is an infringement not only on our rights but on which another right is that of privacy. These things are not even. They say, well, those are political, and you can't address them through the pulpit. Well,
yes.
You don't have to necessarily address the intricacies of these bills, which are thousands of pages long.
Yes,
But what about the process they go through? I mean, you have a bill that is volumes long, and the Congress has maybe an hour at the most to read it, and then to vote on it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The whole system is not addressed. But the main thing is that the pastors have to take the Bible and address these issues so that people are confident that what they are thinking is correct. And if their thinking is correct, then what they do is correct, and they're going to be more emboldened. But they're not getting taught from the pastor. All they're hearing is the propaganda from the news. They buy into it. They're void of even being able to reason in their own mind about these issues, and we wind up with the mess we have today.
Yeah, well, you know, my wife told me last night, Mike, and she was very serious when she said this. She says, you know, Jim, she says, one of these days I'm expecting somebody to show up at our door. And in the course of the conversation, we were addressing the idea of those DA, district attorneys and the sheriff and those other guys that are being shot at the door, you know? And, the issue with her was, is that she's, I said, well, what are you talking about? She says, well, what you're talking about, for example, on your radio programs and in the Sunday morning services. I put out something on Facebook the other day, where I made a comment, a lengthy comment about Islam. And, I make comments about the government and Obama. I call names. Paul called names. I think it's time. We're so far gone now that I think if we don't do that as pastors, I think we're doing, a detriment to our congregation. So I applaud you, pal, for what you're doing and pray that we'll just keep on doing it together. There's a thing that was called Pulpit Freedom Sunday. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not.
Pulpit Freedom Sunday is a group of pastors across the United States. Started out with maybe like 13 and then went to 50 and then it started to blow up. And there's a guy out in California, pastor in California, that has organized this Pulpit Freedom Sunday so that one time a year, pastors are asked to voluntarily get involved in politics from the pulpit and to record their sermon and send it to the IRS. And this year there was, I don't know, well over 1,000 of us that did that. And the issue is that they actually have attorneys that are waiting in line to defend you against the IRS for becoming political. And they mentioned this Black Regiment group back in the early years of our country.
Now you mentioned, you describe it. I have heard about that, but I didn't know what the name of it was.
Yeah, it's called Pulpit Freedom Sunday. Yeah, sure enough. So I became involved with that this for the first time this last year. And there are those out there that are beginning to talk about this. But Mike, every time I turn on the television set and I see, maybe a group of congressmen getting together and they're talking about Obamacare, they're talking about taxation or whatever. And I see the smiles on their face when they're applauding, maybe opposition to these things. And when I look at that smile on the face, I want to reach out and choke them. I'm asking myself, why in the world are they not screaming to the high heavens? Why aren't they? Where is the outrage that Bill Bennett wrote about, the death of outrage? I think that we ought to be outraged about this stuff, and I think we need to be lifting our voices. And, brother, if I've got to die for what I believe, I'm going to die.
Well, unfortunately, that's a very rare character trait that is missing in most people.
Mm-hmm,
it gets back to the point that they don't know how to think. They don't know what their rights are. They don't know biblically what to do, and so they're confused. And the next thing you know, their thinking is changing. You know, I think that people's thinking changes over time, just for good or bad.
Sure.
The enemy never sleeps and is constantly bombarding us with programs, propaganda. They call it programming. They don't call it programming for nothing, because that's what they're doing. They're not informing us with the news. They're programming us. If you don't have that defense in your soul of absolute truth from God's word in order to neutralize that, even believers that at one time were positive, but over a period of time they got distracted and they're no longer getting that consistent inflow, intake of the word, they're vulnerable as well as anyone else, because it's only that doctrine in your soul that enables you to think the way that God wants you to think, and it's that correct thinking that leads to correct action. And that's what this book is actually addressing more than anything, trying to get people to think. And if nothing else, just bring up the issues. I have close to 200 questions in here, and the reason I have so many questions is for them to start thinking.
Oh, absolutely.
I think they're just... they're just hearing a viewpoint, and say, well, that sounds good enough for me, and they just go along with it. They even
have
verbiage from these newscasters as propaganda.
And two things, if I can remember them. The first thing I wanted to say is that I have been challenged by other pastors and other Christians, not from my own congregation, but from other congregations and other pastors out there, have challenged me because of what I'm teaching when I'm teaching about politics, when I'm in opposition to President Obama and what he thinks and what he's doing. And I've been challenged with this idea, but the IRS will remove your 501c3 status. And my answer to that is, I'm not going to stop teaching and preaching about these things because of the threat of losing my 501c3, here's how I'm going to answer the IRS. Listen, I understand what you're saying, but I'll tell you what I'm going to do, sir. I'm going to get in line behind Jesse Jackson, Reverend Wright, Al Sharpton, and a few others. And when you deal with them, then I'll listen to you. Otherwise, shut up. I'm not even going to listen to you. Now, that's...
When it comes to the... to the truth,
mm-hmm.
I don't think we should bow to anyone.
I don't think so either.
And I don't think that we should allow fear to neutralize us to keep our mouths shut.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, whenever you speak truth, you know that you're going to be attacked. And it doesn't only, we're not talking about truth only in the political realm or with regard
mm-hmm.
to the country or
yeah.
patriotism or laws or anything else.
Sure.
Biblical truth. Anytime you assert truth, you're
mm-hmm.
going to have someone that confronts you about it.
Sure.
And where do we go when we're confronted, when we make an absolute statement?
Mm-hmm.
When we're confronted with what our source is. What our source? Our source is the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
We're into postmodernism today, which is the term that really describes the idea that there are no absolutes. So anyone that speaks out absolutely, dogmatically, is
mm-hmm.
going to be challenged because they don't... The postmoderns believe that the only thing you can know for certain is that you can't know anything for certain.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so when you speak out absolutely about any truth, but especially with regards to the government, the condition of the country, you're going to have people assail you. And if you don't have that thinking straight in your mind, backed by biblical precepts, then you're going to be afraid, and you're just going to cower. You're going to retreat. You're not going to stand up and address these issues
yeah.
from a biblical perspective.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mike, the second thing that I wanted to mention after talking about being willing to give up my 501c3 and get in line behind Jesse Jackson, Reverend Wright, and the rest of them, the other thought is this. That again, I don't want to sound like a broken record. I don't want no guilt trips or anything else. But I'm telling you, your message, and I want to say to your congregation, you need to find a way for Pastor Mike's message to get beyond the four walls of his building. Otherwise, the world out here who doesn't want to listen to Jim Bertel needs to hear from a Mike Smith. And the way he can do that is for you to be able to get him on the internet. When he is teaching the Word of God on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Tuesday, Thursday, or whenever he's teaching it, I'm encouraging you and asking you to prayerfully consider and find a way to get him on the internet so that his message can get beyond the four walls. Mike, again, my desire is not to pressure, buddy, but I think so highly of what you're saying, what you teach, that I'm just desirous of seeing it get beyond the four walls, brother. I don't know how. Okay, someone got their microphone. That's okay. If you've got to go down to McDonald's and teach from McDonald's on a Wi-Fi down there, I'd encourage you to do it, brother, because your message needs to be heard beyond the four walls. Now, if you want to respond to that, that's fine. And if not, we can go on from there, brother.
I appreciate your encouragement. You know, we all need encouragement. But, you know, one thing about it that you know as well as I do,
mm-hmm.
that when you know you're right, and I'm talking about biblically right.
Sure, I understand.
I'm not talking about being stubborn or trying to win an argument. I'm talking about to the core of your soul, you know that you're right and that God will support you on it. It's hard to keep your mouth shut. I mean,
yes.
You can't. If you are... have that confidence, and you have the concern. I have a great concern for this country. There would be some people who would read this book and say, "Oh, he's just a critic. He doesn't love the country because he points out these faults that we have, and he's really not patriotic. And that's just the opposite. It's the real patriots. They're going to stand up and say, hey, we have some horrible problems here that we need to address. We need to not be silent now. We need to address these. In fact, we might get to it. I don't know if we will today or not, but you were talking about what about talking about religion and politics? People don't mention those things because they think it's impolite.
Yes.
Politically incorrect. And of course, you don't. There's a time and place for everything, and you don't mention those things at certain places. For instance, if you're at someone's funeral, you're not going to bring up politics. And
yes, uh huh.
But the thing is, these things need to be addressed. They need to be discussed. Because you're not going to come to a solution if you can't even talk about it.
Well, you're absolutely right. And you know, when you talked when you mentioned the fact that when you're certain that you have absolute truth and you're willing to state it, there is going to be opposition to you. For example, Mike, 90% plus, in my understanding, and I've done the math, brother. I've done the math, and 90% plus of the Christians in the United States of America do not believe in the eternal security of the believer. So when you mention eternal security to anybody out here, you're going to find opposition from 90% plus. When you tell somebody out here the tongue ceased, all forms of tongue ceased in 70 AD, listen, the Pentecostal and charismatic world, and even among some of the independent churches, they go wild when you tell them that tongue ceased in 70 AD. And their argument is, but you know, I've done this and it's real. And I point out to them that in the tribulation, when the Antichrist is indwelt by the demonic, listen, what he does is going to be real, but it doesn't come from God. Everything that's real doesn't come from God. So we're going to get opposition for sure. And in the midst of this five generation slide, I think we can expect greater opposition today than ever before.
Well, absolutely. We and it's been that way throughout history.
Oh yeah.
When people are very quick to tell you what they believe, and they're usually hypersensitive. If you don't believe the same way they do, then they want to cut you off. They want to argue with you. They don't have an open mind. But the way I think to cut through that is to ask them why they believe what they believe, because very few people can argue with that position.
Sure.
And what that does is start them to question, maybe for the first time, the belief system, because they're never questioned. They'll hear some politician, they'll hear some person that they respect, or maybe their pastor or someone else has a certain position. And most of the time it's not correct. And when you just question them on that, and if you try to do it in a non-threatening way, well, where did you get that idea? Then they start to melt, usually, because it's they know what they believe, but they don't know why. And just, I think that's a starting point, is to start a discussion, just asking people, well, that's interesting, where did you get that viewpoint? I think that will make them start thinking, and that's what's not happening today, is they're not thinking.
Oh, yeah.
They adopt these ideas, and they like to pontificate on these things, but when you ask them, okay, that's not... When you don't want to just tell them, oh, you're wrong, and start an argument. You just want to
sure.
ask them, I'd like to get some idea of what supports that. Where did you get that?
Absolutely.
Make them start thinking, and most of the time they'll recognize that their ideology is a mile wide and an inch thick, inch deep. It's very shallow.
Yeah, well, you know, Mike, for our listening audience, many of those who are online with us, I guess right now, have been mentored either by Bob Thieme or been mentored by someone who was mentored by Bob Thieme. And one of the things that has happened to me over the years is that when there are those out there from denominational backgrounds that had heard some negative things about the Colonel, then what happened is many people like you and I imagine somewhere along the line you've been called a Thiemite. I've been called a Thiemite for sure. Over all the years. But the truth of the matter is that I believe that while you were mentored by the Colonel for a long period of time, you're still your own man.
You are Mike Smith. You're not RB theme clone. You are Mike Smith. And it's my contention that once I believe the truth, no matter what the source of that truth, it is mine. It doesn't really belong to somebody else. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I would never take anything away from the Colonel, the theme junior. He was my spiritual mentor, and I have nothing but wonderful things to say about him. But
yes.
I'm not a clone.
Amen.
Nor did he ever desire those that he trained to go out and be little miniature RB themes.
Amen. That's right.
He never said that. In fact, I have at least two or three quotes from him in my book that's supporting the things that I'm that I'm presenting there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not concerned about whether people think I'm too far away from him or too close to him. That's not even the issue.
That's
what
right.
What I'm concerned about is how close I am to the Lord and how much I represent him. Not
mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you quote John Eidsmo several times in your book. Do you know John Eidsmo at all, or you just read his work?
No. Well, I know him as an acquaintance. I've met him at conferences and talked to him.
Yes, okay.
I wouldn't say that I'm his a good friend or anything.
No, I understand.
Yeah, I have talked with him before.
Excellent. Well, the reason I ask that is I've had the privilege of doing that same thing, meeting him at conferences back when, maybe 25 years ago or whatever. I have his books, and I've interviewed him twice on my radio program. Hang on just a second. Hang on. I got a phone call here, and it may be the guy from this air conditioning. Hang on, Mike. Hey, it's Dr. Jim. How can I help you? Hello? No, go ahead. Yes, sir, that's correct, and you can come on right now, sir. Okay, bye-bye. Mike, sorry for that. I knew this might happen. My air conditioning went out day before yesterday, and they had just come out to work on it 3 days ago. The day after they came out to work on it, it went bad. So I was waiting for them to call me, and I knew they'd call me right in the middle of the radio program, but that's what that was all about, pal.
Okay.
So let's see. Where were we before we were so... John Eidsmo, yes. But anyway, I've interviewed him twice on a radio program, and I think quite highly of him. He's a constitutional attorney and written well on this area. So anyway, let's go on from there. What are we to do? What are we as American citizens? What are we to do when it's apparent that our government is out of control? And first of all, do you think our government is out of control? And if it is, what do we do?
Well, I do think it's out of control, and I think anyone that doesn't realize that in paying attention.
Boy.
And to answer the question, what are we to do?
Mm-hmm.
I think the first thing that we have to address is what are we to think? Before
mm-hmm.
you act, you should think. And that's why I've written this book. I'm not telling people what to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to do is help them to think for themselves. I give a lot of... of course, verses from the Bible. I give a biblical perspective. I give the viewpoint from some very wise people that have addressed the same issues that we have, and I have numerous quotes in there to give them the idea of it's okay to think outside the box, if you want to call it that. You don't have to go along with the flow of the masses. You can think for yourself, be independent. And you're not only basing it on the Bible, which is the main source, but there's a lot of people that have addressed this, and they use the Bible as well.
Yes.
And you see all these quotes, and you start hearing these things from people throughout history that address these same issues. They face the same issues we have, and their thoughts on it. Then you start getting your thinking in the right direction. You don't have to
mm-hmm.
Go along with the mob. Then you are able to start doing the right thing.
And mm-hmm.
I can't tell anyone what to do in any given situation because the situations vary and they're so diverse. But
mm-hmm.
if their thinking is correct, then what they're going to do is going to be correct.
Yes, yes. Yeah, well, the next question then is, must we obey
every government dictate, and I think key word there is every government dictate without question, even if it's unjust, immoral, or unconstitutional?
Well, there's a number of people that would say absolutely to that, because they're the same people who say, well, it's the law, you have to obey, but obey it.
Yes.
But
mm-hmm,
I don't know
mm-hmm.
that throughout history, there's been a struggle with regards to having a choice as to what you obey.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It makes me think about in Germany when the Jews were ordered to report to certain locations to be sterilized. Well, if you were one of those Jews, then you would be addressing this question, wouldn't you?
Sure enough.
Well, then do you need to obey that? I mean, this isn't something that is fictional. This actually happened. This happens to people.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
so what would you do? And I'm asking the audience, people who are listening sure. to this, if the government ordered you to report to a location to be sterilized, would you obey it? And if you wouldn't, why wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's the question.
Sure enough.
See, I can give a quick answer and say, no, we don't have to obey those laws. But that's, and in throughout the book, I go into a lot of detail in different areas, different situations, to answer that. The short answer is no, we don't. But people have to know why. They have mm-hmm. to know why we don't have to, and at what point do they decide. I think that's the issue that a lot of people avoid. They don't want to admit, they don't want to acknowledge that the United States, the greatest nation on earth, and all the accolades that you could give it, is now turned so far to the dark side that we need to address
mm-hmm.
these questions.
Well, you know, I think Benjamin Netanyahu coined a term that I heard for the first time. I think it came from him when he talked about the red line. You know, here's this line here, this red line. You cross that line, and here's what's going to happen. So I think what we need to realize is, or we need to ask ourselves, where is the red line when the government, because of its unjustness, its immorality, its unconstitutionality, at what point then are we going to stop tolerating this tyrannical government and start to do something about it? Your thoughts?
That's a very good illustration, because yeah. all of us should have these red lines in our souls.
Yeah.
Someone crosses it. It doesn't matter whether it's a government. It doesn't matter whether it's a husband. It doesn't matter whether it's
yeah.
a boss. It doesn't matter who it is. There are lines that when authority crosses, then they are no longer a legitimate authority. They have overstepped the delegated authority that God has given to them. They have become usually a criminal, and they are no longer due respect or obedience.
Mm-hmm,
those
mm-hmm.
red lines you have to face, or else you're going to become part of the problem rather than part of the solution. I think that's a
yeah.
great example with regards yeah. to the red line.
Yeah, well, you know, in the next question, and we're still in the preface, brother, so we need to ask Jesus to tarry for a while here, okay? But does the Bible require Christians to submit unconditionally to a corrupt or abusive government? You know, does the Bible require it, or is submission conditional? But before you answer that question, and I want to ask this. I think we need to make sure we understand what constitutes a corrupt government and what constitutes an abusive government. So let's start there, Mike. Give us your understanding of what a corrupt government or an abusive government happens to be. Can you define that or describe it for us a little bit?
Well, when you start out to answer that, first of all, you have to address, well, what is government's duty? What is their job? What are they doing?
Okay. Okay.
The answer to that is, government's purpose is to defend our rights. Their job is to defend our rights and to have judgment on those who would infringe upon our rights. That's
mm-hmm,
the basic,
mm-hmm.
basic purpose of government. Now, once you understand that and you look at how at society as it is today, and you see that the government intrusion into the lives of the people is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. I mean, you can't hardly go anywhere where you don't see government intrusion. Is that an example of abuse? Is government doing its job? Is it protecting my freedom? Is it protecting my rights? Or is it abusing us, abusing people for by intruding upon their privacy and their property and their freedom? And when you start answering these questions, I think it's pretty clear to see that our government has gone beyond the delegated authority as being a servant and has become the master. Do you agree?
I was hoping that's the way you were going to answer that. We're going to have to go back to the Constitution and ask ourselves, what is the constitutional responsibility for government? And I think you answered the question well. It is to protect us, not do something for us, but to protect our life, our liberty, and our property. Mike, I think that's exactly right. But how do we get around then? How do we get around this notion that you and I, when we talk about the Constitution, we want to talk about originalism? But Barack Obama, and going all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson and FDR and Lyndon Baines Johnson and Jimmy Carter, and all the way up even to through the Bushes and then on to Barack Obama,
you're making me nauseated.
Well, listen.
I think back on one of these administrations.
Yeah. Well, listen. You know, that's okay. There's a doctrinal solution for that nausea. but anyway, when you look at all that and you see what has taken place, let's see. Where I was going with that. My contention then, is whether or not we're going to view the Constitution as it was originally designed, or are we going to buy the lie that it is a living document that allows us to interpret it any way we want to? Because the Obama administration is telling us that. His whole administration, forget this original intent. We have changed. We've changed over all these years, and you're going to deal with that in your book too, by the way, about change over a period of time. So I guess here's my question to you, Mike. How do we deal with those folks out there that have bought the lie that the Constitution is a living document and not to be understood in its original intent?
Well, the founders were not just they didn't just fall off the turnip truck. These are very wise aristocratic type men, very highly educated, very well versed in governments but when they formed the Constitution, they did it with the idea that man has an old sin nature, and that never changes throughout time. And they did not trust government. The whole structure of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, is based on that premise. Once you get away from that and start thinking, well, we can change that, because over time they say, well, we live in modern times, that's really not relevant. Well, what hasn't changed is that man is still sinful, and anytime someone has authority, the propensity is for them to take that authority and go beyond that delegated authority and to assume powers that were never given them to begin with. And when you get away from that, then you're in big time trouble. It's the Constitution is the only thing that keeps us from being what I call a banana republic. We're a nation of laws. We're not a nation of men. We're a nation of laws, and there's no one above the law.
We
get away from that, but I think today, Dr. Jim, what's happening is that the Constitution is just completely ignored, as if it didn't exist.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And the problem is the people are tolerating that, and they don't know where's the outcry.
I know we
got out of time. I'd like to speak more on that, but I know.
Well, we'll do that. Let's do that next week. But why don't you take the last whatever here and close out the program whatever way you want. And we'll just thank all of the folks for being online with us tomorrow or today. And go out there and tell your friends and ask them to log in again next Monday. We're going to pick up and move on from here. So close it any way you want to, Mike.
Okay. Okay, well, I'd like to thank everyone that is listening to this program, and I would like to challenge them to tell other people, tell their friends, tell anybody that they think might be interested, or even those that aren't interested, hey, I've listened to something I think is pretty challenging, maybe you'll be interested in it, and give them this link to get involved in this, because that's the problem, people are not getting involved. The apathy and the indifference is one of the major hurdles, and it starts with people like these that are listening to tell other people to get engaged so they can start thinking, so they can start making biblically correct decisions based on what's going on in their lives.
Okay, buddy. Thank you. God bless you, pal, and let's just keep on keeping on. Appreciate your time this morning, okay?
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome, buddy. I'm going to go ahead and close out the recording. Okay, I've just closed out the recording now, and we'll have that up on iTunes probably within an hour or two, something like that. My friend Ed Halsman will have that up there for us. I want to thank every one of you. And if you have any questions about any of this, you feel free to raise your hand. You raise your hand, we'll come to you and let you comment or ask a question. We'll have Pastor Mike answer those questions for you. Or if you want to email us, email them to us. Let's get this thing right. And listen, stand up for what you believe. Stand up for what you believe. It's time that we do this. And I thank you for being with us today. Okay, God bless all of you. And bye-bye. We'll see you. You can go back. Mike won't be with me tomorrow, but I'll have Pastor Al Rosenblum with me tomorrow. And Steve Haynes, pastor for and chaplain for Racers for Christ on Wednesday. And then Steve Haworth on with us from Thelwall, England, a question-answer period on Friday. God bless all of you, and thank you for being with us today. Bye-bye now.